Hello and welcome back to another 3-peat podcast episode. I'm your host, Josh Fromwitz, once again joined by
Steven Venazzo,
Alex Castle.
And this week we got a very special episode for you guys. We're joined by a special guest, Will Berkowitz, who's going to discuss his career throughout high school, how he battled some ups and downs throughout his career, and his future as a Division I athlete. So, Will, thank you for joining us.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, Josh. It's definitely a pleasure to be on here.
So, Will, the first thing I want to ask you is, what age did you start wrestling?
My whole life, you know, me and my dad would wrestle around and just kind of like goof off, you know, in the house. You know, I'm pretty sure that's something that every, you know, father son has in an early relationship. You know, my dad wrestled in high school and he wasn't very good, so he always told me he wanted to get me started a little earlier. So I started wrestling around fifth grade. Just had a little junior program that was local. Wrestling's not too big in my area, so there was just, you know, one small junior program through a local Division I college kind of across the county. You know, only a few guys there. And so that's really where I learned to wrestle. You know, I was being coached by some D1 coaches at a very young age, and they, you know, that's where I learned my basics. That's where I developed my, you know, original style. And that's where I, you know, fell in love with the sport is at that early age. And so as I got older through middle school and then eventually in high school, I began to progress more into the sport and become better and just, you know, really see myself surpass like other kids, where other kids would be, you know, would be whooping me my first year or two, and I'd only have a couple wins after, you know, I get some experience. I just kind of, I really started to have success in about middle school, and then that's where everything really started to click, and I really started to love the sport more, just, you know, have that success, you know, the taste of success, you know, makes you love something a little more. But so getting into high school, I was, you know, like I said, my wrestling's not too popular in my area, so the only place I ever really trained was at a small club. So getting into high school, I was kind of raw, not really too well coached, you know, I just had a little bit of coaching in my early days, and I just kind of learned everything I had through experience in tournaments and stuff. So getting through, I was kind of a little bit under. I didn't know as much as a lot of the other guys at the higher level in the state, but I was still able to compete and then actually make the state tournament as a freshman and place fifth in the state as a freshman. And I started to face adversity a little bit later on in my junior year with injury, with a concussion. I think I got a little off strike. You asked me when I started wrestling, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's where I started wrestling, is just as a junior at the junior club.
Now, Will, I have a question for you. So you, obviously you committed to University of Maryland. Why did you choose that school out of, I don't know if you have any other offers from other schools wanting you to wrestle?
Well, University of Maryland was, straight up, it was the biggest offer opportunity I had to wrestle at, you know, the highest level, which, you know, my dream ever from starting and having success, like I said, I was starting to have a success in middle school. I saw myself winning a state championship, you know. Unfortunately, that never happened. You know, we'll get there, but that never happened. But I always had high goals for myself. I always saw myself competing at the highest levels with the best athletes in the country, you know. That's just who I am. That's just as a person and everything I do. I see myself competing with the best and literally pick up basketball and anything else. So I always wanted to compete, you know, at the highest levels. I had as far as other offers, I had an offer from another Division I school, Gardner Webb, which is the same school that I learned to wrestle at across the county, and a couple Division II looks, and then a couple other Division I's that could have potentially had an offer if I would have probably looked into a little more. But I committed early in my senior year to Maryland. So I kind of ended my recruiting a little bit early.
And then to add on to that, was there like a moment or somebody that said something to you that made you realize that you could take this and wrestle at the next level and actually make it, you know, make it to the next level, basically?
Well, that's actually, I always, you know, like I said, you know, when I say that, I always saw myself winning and competing with the best. I mean that from the middle school to freshman year. For me, as a freshman, I wanted to be a four-time state champion. And I really saw myself doing that, you know. I saw myself doing that. And to me, I always had a conversation with my dad is what I want and what I create for myself is what I sacrifice. You know, I have to sacrifice and train and work for everything that I get, you know. Unfortunately, I never ended up winning that state title, but I always saw myself taking those state titles and going on to wrestle in college. That was always a goal, you know. That was always a passion. I definitely always, you know, it took a lot for me to wrestle at the level that, you know, over 5 years. But I always wanted to wrestle at the next level. And I had to, my senior year, like I said, I went through an injury my junior year, and I wasn't even able to wrestle in high school at all. I didn't get to go to the state tournament and or compete in any postseason stuff. So really, as soon as I recovered from that injury, I spent all the off season training hard, focusing on tournaments I'd have to go in the preseason of my senior season. I stopped playing football. I really, really had to train hard and try and get noticed, you know, and put through the extra sacrifice to make sure I had the opportunity to wrestle at the next level. So it isn't just going and wrestling at your high school practices and doing your workouts that your coaches are telling you to do. And just going and doing the best you can at the state tournament. It's, you know, really going outside. It's going to camps in the summertime and getting in front of coaches and letting them see you, letting them notice you, letting them know your name. You know, it takes going outside, you know, going to other tournaments that are not required, going to other practices. You know, you have to go and make yourself get noticed. You can't just expect, you know, there's so many people who are very talented who just, you know, they're going to the places they want to go because they didn't make sure they got noticed. They weren't on it. They're that coach's radar. That you have to get on the coach's radar to get those opportunities. You know, you have to go and get opportunities. They don't come, you know.
So, Will, what it sounds like to me is that you've had a lot of different experiences getting to the spot where you are now with your Division I scholarship to Maryland. A lot of preparation has come to this moment. Being that we're slowly approaching to the middle part of the summer, you know, you're getting to that point where school is starting to get closer if we do go back. What are some of the things that you've been doing to keep yourself in shape and to prepare to compete with these other Division I athletes with the lack of resources that we have with everything going on with the virus?
That's a great question. And a lot of, you know, what I see like around the world is like people, you know, talking about how, you know, we're in a very bad time. We're not right now, which is, you know, it's true. We're in a worldwide crisis pandemic, you know, so it makes your options a little limited, you know, so we got to be a little bit more creative. We got to be positive in our thought process as well. So, you know, I can take this time, you know, where it's probably going to be the most freest I'll ever be in my life, the most time where I can really put something together, a plan, and really develop myself. You know, it's an opportunity. You know, you got to look at it in a positive way instead of just a negative way. So I've chosen to look at this as a positive way and train. And I haven't had the most opportunity to get on the mat. I've actually haven't wrestled in the past 2 months, with the exception of this week. I was just able to get back into the wrestling room. So, you know, what does that mean? That means I hit the weights a little harder, you know. I work on my cardio, work on my training if it's watching wrestling videos or just watching my old wrestling film or wrestling videos of my favorite people, my favorite wrestlers, and I can learn and take notes from, you know, whether it's just watching interviews with my favorite wrestlers and picking their brain and podcasts, you know. There's always something you can do to get better, and nobody is perfect. Everybody can always get better in anything they do. So it just takes, it really takes creativity, especially in these times. Yeah. I've written down some workouts, you know, I've had to come up with some. I work with a personal trainer as well, who has a weight program for me that I follow step by step 4 days a week. You know, I've been making sure I stay busy and keep myself developing and trying to improve every day. You know, that's the key.
So, well, you briefly touched upon that you suffered a concussion your junior year, which kept you out of your season. So can you just elaborate more, like if you had more injuries or if that was just your one?
No, that was definitely a very severe, very low point in my life, and that's a very big part of who I am today. It's helped form who I am today. So I kind of stopped myself earlier on in the question you asked. When I started wrestling, I began to talk about my high school career, but I kind of wanted to leave it for this moment right here. But anyway, so like I said, I had a successful freshman and sophomore. I placed fourth in the state, fifth in the state my freshman year, fourth in the state my sophomore year. Those were two, both tournaments I felt like I should have done better. You know, everybody does. Every great wrestler, every good wrestler, everybody who wants to be great, you know, always pushes themselves. They never settle for, they're never satisfied. You know, that's in every athlete. That's in every athlete who wants to see better in them. So, you know, I always wanted to improve. And, you know, my junior year, I played football all since second grade, and I actually got a concussion. First concussion started was in the very beginning of the football season. It was literally in a preseason game. It put me out for the first week or two of the football season. It was a minor, not even worried about it. That was probably about my third or fourth that I've ever had. I think it's my third recorded concussion. And then, so later on that football season, the second round of the state playoffs, I was in on special teams. You know, I was never a game changer on the field. I was never one of the best players on the football field. I was just kind of, and I was also somebody who would be out on special teams, and I would just go give my 100% every play. So particularly that's where I was. You know, I was on special teams and just got blindsided. You know, I'm 135 pounds at the time, you know, so a 200-pound linebacker coming at me isn't going to be a good combination. And so that's where I picked up my first concussion. So it put me out of wrestling for about a month, and which wasn't long enough. And I came back and wrestled, and I was in a match. In the match that I concussion, my second impact concussion, I was wrestling, and I remember I was up 5-0 at the time, and I simply was just on bottom, and I think I went to stand up, and I think me and him butted heads, and I really do not remember much since. I just remember laying on the ground and just looking up, and that was it right there. I had concussed. I mean, I had just gotten pinned. I didn't even know it. You know, the room was spinning. It was a terrible situation. But I ended up putting me out for the remainder of the season, and it put me in a very poor mental state. I don't know if you guys have ever, you know, experienced a concussion or anything, but it's not fun, especially a severe one. It caused me to go into, you know, like depression, a little bit of depression. I started making some bad decisions. You know, I was not focused on wrestling. I wasn't focused on my grades. I ended up failing out of a couple classes. It was just not a good time for me. And in July or January, this happened in December. The concussion happened in December. In January, it just got to a point where I ended up getting getting into some trouble. And then I sat down and talked to my dad, and we talked about how, I needed to change, you know, something needed to change. I wasn't heading for to improve. I was only making myself worse. I wasn't, you know, focusing on making myself better. So from that point forward, I focused on recovery. I focused on recovery every day. I started putting the right things in my body, nutrition wise, and really just started thinking positively from that point forward. I was on the mat, and about a month later, maybe a week or two after the state finals, because I missed that tournament. So then I started training, and I trained all throughout the off season. I ended up going to the national tournament my junior year, but I did not compete well. You know, it was only a couple of weeks after I'd gotten back from all that, so I didn't compete well there. And then I was trained all throughout the summer, time where I'd actually trained year round. Normally I would take a break for the summer, maybe hit a few camps, but I trained all throughout the summer to go to Super 32, the Super 32 qualifier, and I-64. So I went to a few preseason tournaments, and I ended up taking second at the Super 32 qualifier in Georgia. And I ended up having, I went 3-2 at Super 32. I had a decent showing. I beat a couple good kids. I beat three pretty good kids, and a couple losses that, you know, that I learned from and I was able to improve off of. And but at this point, you know, I'm coming from a low point in my life, the concussion where it put me out of my junior season, and a year that really, it should have been my year. If I was, you know, focusing, and if I would have not rushed my concussion, you know, it's a year that should have, could have, would have, you know, I felt like it was my year. And that really, it took that low point for me to realize that, you know, I had to do more. I have to, you know, I have to improve every day. I have to be different. I have to sacrifice things, you know, I have to go. And if I want something out of this sport, if I want something out of life, you know, I'm going to have to go down and put my head down and put the work for it. And everybody has adversity that they have to deal with. You know, it's not just me. So, but since then, I have not had any, well, knock on wood, any kind of severe injuries, and I've been training, you know, to the fullest, and I've really kept my head up. I really worked hard this past year, and just came in the state finals. I ended up losing, but you know, it is what it is. It's just something you got to look forward from, and keep working hard, and then I'll be in Maryland next year, looking to do something big as a redshirt.
Will, you said you played football and then obviously wrestling. Both are physical sports, which you got to have a lot of toughness to play both. But also, what about leadership? You know, both sports require leadership, whether, you know, someone else takes it or collectively as a team, you know, everyone needs to be leaders to be on top of each other. Can you kind of let us know, like, you know, whether you had to be a leader at times or whether, you know, the other guys around you, other teammates, all, you know, showed some sort of leadership, if you want to just kind of give some details about that.
Right. And that's you're right. That is a big part of both sports, leadership, you know. And I was around the football team I played for. I go to Shelby High School, or I'm graduating from Shelby High School. And our football team has won the past 6 out of 7 state championships. It's kind of a dynasty here in Shelby. The football has just always been good. So coming in, you know, to a football program like that, I was able to see, you know, kids who are literally top in the country kids practicing with me, you know. And so I get to see and watch and pick their brains and watch how they lead us, lead the, you know, lead whether the younger guys and the varsity guys. And so I got to learn, you know, leadership from very great leaders and great athletes, you know, football player off on a different, you know, in a different sport, you know. And I got to implement that into wrestling. I did. But, you know, Shelby, our wrestling team is not the same as the football team. We do not have very much success, you know. We actually had like 5 kids on the team my sophomore year. This year, the only kids who even qualified for regionals, which are qualified for state, is just me and my little brother. So traditionally, we're just not the best wrestling team, and there's not very many people to, you know, lead. But I actually, once I recovered from my concussion, I started attending a club, which is about an hour and a half, and I drive that way about 2 or 3 times a week during the off season, and I try to make it at least twice during this regular season. And so that club is a completely different atmosphere. You know, there's a whole bunch of kids in there, a lot of talent in there. And immediately when I walked in there, and it's all about leadership, it's all about doing the right thing, it's all about helping each other, helping your teammates. It's all about enjoying people and enjoying yourself and improving and helping other people improve. So, you know, that C2X, you know, has been a great place for me to develop. As I said, you know, I was kind of at a low point in my life from my concussion. And once I started training and really putting my head down and focusing on, you know, myself, I improved as a wrestler significantly, but I became a whole different person. You know, coming back from some adversity like that, it really, helps you understand things a little bit better and a different point of view. And C2X was a very big part of that, you know, a very welcoming sphere. And everybody there is, you know, there to, is there to see you improve. So it's easy to be in that situation. You know, it's easy to come in there and make friends and then also be able to help people who aren't as good as you, who maybe look up to me. I'm, you know, as a senior and committed to a college. Oh, there's kids in there who look up to me. There's kids in there who certainly give me a very good run for my money on the mat. But it's also given me the opportunity, like I said, to learn to be a leader and to learn to lead talented kids and kids who want to be better. And that right there, that's where I credit my leadership skills to come from, that club right there. So, whether it took me leading some practices in my high school, you know, guys back there who know what's going on too much in the sports, two different atmospheres, you know, it helped me, C2X helped me become, you know, a leader for my high school and help, you know, teach some of the guys who, you know, really don't, you know, have much wrestling background, don't know what to do with the sport. Yeah. I enjoy making an impact on other wrestlers as well as, you know, an impact on myself.
It it seems like, Will, that you've had a lot of great experiences, you know, leading a bunch of different types of wrestlers, having experiences just leading in general. You overall have had a lot of experiences with the sport, whether it's just, you know, dealing with injuries or coming from an area where, you know, wrestling is not too popular, you didn't have much to work with, but you really kind of beat all those odds and, you know, you are where you are today. What advice would you give to these younger wrestlers, not just from your town who are facing that, but any young wrestler in your position, you know, what advice would you really give them to get to the spot that you are today?
Well, the biggest thing is, number one, is work ethic. You know, is if you have the work ethic and if you have the sure dedication, you can make anything happen. You know, if you work hard and you put down these certain amount of work ethic, you know, you can make your dreams come true. You can do anything. But also, it takes getting noticed. So as I, you know, from a young age, I always wanted to just, this is just how I did, how I was kind of, it's a big part of how I developed is I went to summer camps, you know, wrestling camps in the summer. I'd go to colleges and I started out going to Ohio State and then I ended up going to Maryland throughout high school and for the summer camps. And then you really get noticed when you go to specific colleges and wrestle in front of those coaches, you know. So it takes going to outside tournaments, outside camps, you know, it takes getting noticed, but it also takes work ethic. It's one thing to get noticed. Anybody can go wrestle in front of those coaches, but not everybody can go and be the hardest worker that those coaches see all month. That not everybody can go and listen and become and really pick everything out of every single practice and really pick everything in the situation. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's gonna be the best, you know, at the best learner, the best worker, the best wrestler, the best athlete, the best talent, you know. But if you really, really try and take something from everything, you know, if you really try and be and work harder than everybody else around you, you know, that's noticeable. You know, coaches are going to see and notice that, you know, that work ethic and that just dedication. You know, that's a big part of how I've got the opportunity to wrestle at the next level. It's just coaches understand that when they see me work, when they see me practice, that there's nobody in the room that's going to practice harder than me. It's just the type of wrestler that I am, the type of person that I am.
Well, I just want to thank you for joining us today. It was incredible just hearing your story and the leadership and the stories that you want to teach and have on others. Is definitely one that a lot of people should take notice of and listen to. So we just want to thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. Really, best of luck for you. We can't wait to hear all the amazing things you're going to do.
Yeah, well, everything that I heard from you today, I know that you'll do well at the next level and just in life in general. So I just want to wish you the best of luck and definitely, you know, love to have you on in the future too.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you. So going off of leadership, another big leader, I guess, similar to the leadership roles that we see in Will, we saw this past Sunday in The Last Dance with Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan. So I want to ask you guys, first, if you were to start up, if you were a leader of a team, would you want to take the Michael Jordan route and be the tough leader? Or would you want to be the Scottie Pippen type, be the leader that was kinder to teammates, but not necessarily the winner that Jordan was?
That's a tough question, because personally, when I played football or other sports, I wasn't the loud, tough guy because I was known as a more kind, you know, you can get along with easily. Plus, I'm not as intimidating as Jordan is, as, you know, a smaller person. I would like to think I was tough, but maybe not like tough with attitude. I was like, you know, I could take a hit and I'd be fine, I'd get up, but maybe yelling at teammates, I wasn't like tough like that. But so I guess you could say I was more of a Scottie Pippen. But looking back, I think the way to go is Michael Jordan, because you saw what MJ did. MJ did everything in his power to win. He didn't care if you liked it or not, or if you necessarily didn't get along well during practice, because he wanted to do everything he could to get better and win. And you saw the story with Steve Kerr. You know, they got into the fight, they were pushing and shoving. But as Steve Kerr said, that was almost the best thing that could have ever happened to them, because then MJ respected Steve Kerr and Steve Kerr stood up for himself. Also with that, MJ said, you know, he wasn't having them do what he wasn't doing. He was doing exactly what they were doing and maybe even more. So an attitude like that seems like the better way. Obviously, no one wants to always be in that position and be the hated. Everyone wants to be friendly and get along. But the numbers show 6 championships, how many championship MVPs, Hall of Fame career, and obviously a lot of people agree that he is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. So it is tough, but I think the Michael Jordan way is the right way.
I think I do agree with you, Steve. I mean, talking from a personal experience before I get into that, I was fortunate in high school where I did have the experience being the leader of a sports team. I was one of 3 captains for my high school swim team. And it was a great experience. I do have to say, though, I was more of the Pippin type of leader. You know, not that I was really, I was not really as vocal as maybe as one of my other co-captains when it came to addressing the team in general, but I was, you know, I was more of that type of Scottie Pippen guy, you know, put my arm around you, you know, tell you that things are going to be okay, you know, stuff like that. And I just think that just happens to be who my, you know, who I am by nature. You know, I'm that type of guy where I'm just going to pull you aside and tell you that things are going to be okay. And I think that is effective, you know, because, you know, aside from these guys being your teammates, they're people in general. People like being treated with respect. I'm not saying, you know, that Jordan was this total disrespectful asshole, because you do see that, you know, in, you know, post game, even if it was a bad game, you know, he could still joke around with some guys. So you did see that side to him. But I think for what Jordan's goal when it came to being a professional basketball player, the drive that he had, the mission that he was on, I think his leadership style was the most successful, because, you know, his goal was, you know, when he had that conversation, if you guys remember an episode in the first episode from last week, he had that conversation with that reporter, and, you know, he told the reporter his plan, you know, I'm going to retire and I'm going to play baseball. And the guy was like, why not now? And he said, because Johnson and Bird don't have three. And he wanted to surpass that. And he couldn't have done that, you know, with the leadership style of Scottie Pippen. Sure, he left a bad taste in some of his teammates' mouths with the comments and everything. There's no doubt about that. But I think that, you know, pushing guys, getting in their face, getting that energy up, getting that aggression up, I think that's what, you know, that's how you set up your team to put their best foot forward and win that championship. So even though it's not my leadership approach, might not be my leadership approach, I think it was Jordan's best way to go about it with that Bulls team.
I agree with what both of you are saying about Jordan's leadership being the right way, because Scotty, while he was the nice guy, I don't know if I'd want him to be the leader, because let's take an example. Obviously, we all, when we saw the episode, the classic example is when Phil Jackson drew up a play for Tony Kukoc to hit the game-winning shot. Pippen flipped out, and Phil Jackson said, are you in or out, basically? And he said he's out, meaning like he wouldn't be on the court for even the final play. I wouldn't want that as a leader. Yeah, Michael Jordan would be tough on me, but at the end of the day, you saw the success he had, and it made all the players better when they like realized later on that he pushed them to bring out the best in every single player, every single day of practice.
And to your point, sometimes being the leader means even if you don't have the ball, you got to be supportive of your teammates. Mm-hmm. And in that instance, Scotty wasn't supportive. And in the interview part with him of the current day, Scotty Pippen, and he said, you know, I kind of regret doing it, blah, blah, blah. But if he had the chance to change it, he would not. So, you know, I know obviously everyone holds grudges for certain things, or, you know, certain sports moments kind of, you know, they don't sit well with you. But if you want to be a leader, if you want to be a winner, you got to do what's best for the team. So if Jordan was, you know, a little, you know, doing some trash talking during practice, you know, getting on top of the guys, and Scotty was, you know, kind of more of a laid back, but still competed hard, that's okay for both sides. But in Scotty's, you know, event, you know, he should not have had stayed out. He should have went on that court and showed a leader that, you know what, I'm mature enough and I'm a leader to say, you know what, Tony, you take this shot because we trust you. You made these shots in the past and let's go win this game. But because he seemed a little salty about it, you know, and then it's like, the teammates felt like he betrayed him, and he did. There's no doubt about it. So and obviously Scotty didn't really have a moment like that again. That was just kind of a one-time thing. But still, it makes an impact on your teammates, and that's not what leaders are and not what leaders are supposed to do. So that's my little two cents with it.
No, yeah. I definitely, you know, here was Scotty who had the opportunity. Now, look, he was never going to be the MJ for that team. There was just no doubt about that. But here, Pippen had a real chance to do something with this Bulls team. And, you know, look, even if you're not taking the final shot, you're still the number one guy. You're still on the court celebrating with your team, doing this and that. And then just seeing him sitting there with the towel over his head because Phil told him that he couldn't take the final shot. I mean, not only does that reflect on him, but I feel like you could even take that a step further and reflect it on the culture of that Bulls team. Because, you know, when Jordan left, Scottie had this image in his head that it was going to be the Scottie Pippen show, and he was just going to be helping out all these little pieces to, you know, put the Bulls in a similar position. And when that didn't happen, I feel like he was just this baby in the corner that just sat there and was like, well, if you're not going to treat me like I should be treated, then this is what's going to happen. And I just think that was unfair of Scottie Pippen to do that, because he was not Michael Jordan. You know, he shouldn't have expected immediate similar treatment like that. Now, this is not a major blemish on his career, obviously. You know, he's still part of arguably the greatest sports team in history. He's got multiple rings, you know, this and that. He's a big part of this documentary, but still, it just makes it, you know, it just makes it a very interesting thing to think about, how when you're the next to fill in for the team superstar, what do you expect, you know, what do you expect things to be like? What are the expectations? And, you know, I guess my question with this is, have we seen any cases like this today? Can you guys think of where a top athlete for a team has been hurt? The number two guy has come up. He's expected treatment to be similar, if not the same, and it just didn't play out for him.
Yeah, and you saw it with the records and everything. When MJ left, the Bulls were barely fighting for a playoff spot. And then once MJ returned, even though they didn't win the finals that year, he still, you know, brought them so close with not even being in basketball shape and only playing, what, I forgot how many games they said, but barely any, while these guys played a full season and more. So definitely the two leaderships you can see between the two guys. And but I was really moved by Michael Jordan's father and how tragically his life was taken and how much of an impact it had on Michael Jordan. And so you saw when Michael Jordan decided to retire from basketball the first time and go into baseball because Michael's father wanted him to be a baseball player growing up. And when Michael felt like he did everything he could in basketball and kind of lost his drive in basketball a little bit, he wanted to play baseball. And it kind of cleared his mind a little bit of his father's death. So that was definitely touching. I don't know what you guys felt about that part of the documentary.
So I think one thing that I didn't know about the story was people put the blame on Michael Jordan for the cause of his father's death and all of that, because all the reporters at the time were assuming that he retired because there was some suspension that was going to come from David Stern, the commissioner at the time. And it was this undercover plan that he would retire so it wouldn't blow up or he wouldn't have to deal with the suspension. And for a Jordan who was 30 at the time, and he's very hurt by his father's death, like, and being seen as this guy who is the reason his father is dead, it moved me and was very unfair to see the false blame.
It's very unfortunate. to see how media can abuse its power. That part really hit me too, especially as someone who is pursuing a career in journalism. You know, I feel like it's an ethical thing. I mean, you have a top athlete in the country who's mourning the death of their father, and you're just flooding the headlines with reports that he had something to do with it. You know, it's just truly fascinating to see what types of stories people can come up with in times of tragedy. However, I will say this, you know, it might just me, you know, loving a good conspiracy theory. But I do think that Jordan's gambling definitely had something to do with it. Just putting pieces together from previous episodes with Magic Johnson talking about how competitive Jordan was with playing cards and telling the stories about that. And, you know, just knowing that Jordan did owe a good amount of money. I'm not saying it was definitely, you know, the main reason, but it is a little suspicious, the fact that, you know, you had reporters and analysts in the stories mentioning about the conspiracy theory with the gambling and everything. And then you had David Stern and Michael Jordan's, you know, giving these little quick answers about, you know, obviously it's not true and this and that. I don't know. You know, yes, I understand that he wanted to, you know, take that time away from basketball to mourn. But, you know, he went from one sport to another. And yes, I understand that he was doing it for his father, but it still makes you wonder, like, if you really needed to take that time, why not just take the time from sports altogether and just spend some time with the family playing golf? So it just really makes you think what went behind this.
Pieces behind the scene that you don't really see. There's now something that just came up with basketball, and it's Zion Williamson, who could be the face of the NBA for many years like Jordan was. And he's now being sued, right, for $100 million because he supposedly received illegal benefits while at Duke and really to attend Duke. I guess he was given $100 million if he were to attend a Nike or Adidas-branded school. And obviously Duke is a Nike-branded school. So, and I think – I want to say it was his former agent, not agent, but marketing agent, someone of some sort like that, is now suing him for $100 million. So I have a lot to say on this subject, but I'll let you know if I'll ask you guys if you have your opinions first, and then I can get back to mine.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a Sports Illustrated article right now that's talking about it. And yeah, it was Prime Sports Marketing that sued it. They're seeking $100 million, like you said. And it was for when he was at Duke, which was it because he, like, did he accept money? Was it he accepted Nike products? Well, do you know exactly what it was?
I see. That's when I'm, like, kind of still confused on this. I don't know if he... They said that he received illegal benefits, so I don't know if that means he was given money to go to Duke go to Duke itself, or if he just had to go to a Nike or Adidas school and wear their products. And so there hasn't been a lot of more information that's come out that's saying exactly what they're suing him for, but I'm assuming that just like many of these other top athletes that get paid to go to school illegally, it could be somewhere in that same kind of boat. But I just find it kind of ridiculous because, you know, he's a 17-year-old kid coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Now he's 19 years old. But at that time, you know, it's not like he was a rich, you know, he came from a rich family or anything. And when you have people, you know, just probably just corrupting him, almost saying like, listen, we'll give you this, we'll give you that, we'll give you this. As a 17-year-old kid, I mean, I know I would probably take it. $100 million, like, that's a lot of money. So whether he was given the $100 million or he was given less and some other stuff and they're just suing him for that, I don't exactly know. But, I mean, you could do a lot with that money. You could support his family. And obviously, you know, that's what he wants to play basketball, but also support his family, support himself, support others. I mean, Zion is not like this figure that has problems. I mean, he's never gone to any trouble. This is the first trouble thing that's ever come out of his name. So, and now they're bringing Coach K, that Coach K could almost testify against him. And that could be to save Coach K's job. So I think it's kind of bad that Zion's name is going to get ruined in this, because first of all, he's not the first case in this. And there's a new rule now that like athletes in college can earn money off their name now. And, you know, I don't think that he was making money off his name, but still. So I think obviously there's going to be people who said, well, Zion should not have taken that. But you don't know what went on that could have – what if Zion was forced into taking it? What if he almost didn't have a choice? We don't know. So I think this situation, and for it to come out of nowhere, and I mean, $100 million is a lot too. So there's got to be a lot more to the story that has to come out. He hasn't commented on this yet. Neither has Coach K, or I believe even just Duke athletics program. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I find this story ridiculous, to be honest.
It is ridiculous. I think it's unfortunate that such a young superstar like Zion already has to kind of get his name dragged through the mud a little bit with a story like this. Like you mentioned, Steve, there's not really a whole lot of information on it, so I can't really make too many comments on it. I want to know a little bit more first before I can really get in depth to it. But I will say that, you know, I feel like with stories like Zion, with, you know, you have these young athletes who are extremely talented, who don't come from the best financial situations. Unfortunately, I think that these big corporations like Nike and Adidas, they just see it as opportunities to strike. And, you know, when you're a kid who comes from a situation from nothing, and then you have, you know, two of the biggest shoe athletic wear brands in the world coming at you with illegal endorsement deals, yeah, you know the risk behind it. But on the other hand, you know that this is a chance for you to start taking care of your family. And I think it's truly upsetting to see that these companies do that. I know that Zion is not the first case. And, you know, you mentioned Coach K testifying against him as a possibility. You know, Coach K, obviously one of the most respected college coaches. He did a lot with the Olympic team, coached with them. It would be very interesting to see him testify against one of his own players. I will say that. Even if it is to save his job, look at the potential that Zion has. Look what he could be doing for the NBA. And, you know, as a former coach, you would think you would want to see him succeed. And this testimony against him could really ruin that. So very interesting to see what continues with this story. I think it's a great developing story. Definitely some entertainment to follow in the world of basketball. But I truly hope for Zion's case that he can make it out okay.
Yeah, there'll definitely be some more developing stories over the next few weeks, and we'll continue to follow that and provide content to you guys, the listeners, as it develops. Another thing that continues to develop as we speak is baseball. And we have our social media guy, Alex Ortiz, that'll provide some more information about baseball and the developments that keep happening in the sport.
So, yeah, thank you, Josh. First off, there's a lot going on. They have a start date. They're looking to start around July 4th to start the regular season. So that assumes that spring training would probably take place around mid to late June, which would be good, gets the players back to warming up, getting the use of the game again, getting to feel back, like being comfortable is really important. So, and then there's also the universal DH now. which could be very, very big. This could make a big impact on the National League. I feel like it takes away from the true competition, but if the players are going to agree to it, they are all itching to play a season. So, I mean, let's make baseball happen. Like, what do you guys think about the DH being implemented into the National League?
I love it.
I think it could be exciting. I mean, it's I'll tell you one thing. It'll make it a lot easier when I go on and play MLB The Show. Now they don't have to have my pitcher hit. But in all seriousness, I definitely think it adds more of a competitive element to the game. Now that you've got stacked up hitters, now when you have American League and National League teams, it'll be a little more competitive. It'll be a different change for baseball, but I think it'll be for the better.
And finally, the Yankees pitchers won't get hurt running the bases because it'll be DH all around. But, I mean, I'll give props to the MLB for figuring this out during a pandemic and everything that we're going on right now in this country. But listen, the people want baseball, people want live sports, and it seems as if the MLB is going to deliver it and deliver it soon. So I will definitely be looking forward to tuning in and watching Yankees games. Alex, like you said, it's going to be, or to both Alexes, it's going to be different, but I guess it's better than nothing, right? So
definitely. We already see that Korea, the KBO, they're having no fans. MLB's trying to follow the same protocols with what they're doing. So I think that's great. They did testing for coronavirus antibodies. So I noticed that only 60 out of like 5,700 participants only tested positive for those antibodies, which was it's a good number because it's only about a very less than like 1% just about. So hopefully we can see baseball back to swinging in no time.
Yeah. I personally was never a fan of the NL rule, NL having pitchers bat. I feel like for the most part, with the exception of like a Bartolo Colon, pitchers were an easy out. Obviously you have Bartolo hitting dingers. So it'll definitely be very interesting to see when it starts up. I am very excited to watch some baseball again, even though it'll be in an empty stadium. It's good to have live sports again that's not Korean baseball. But yeah, I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. Thank you, Alex, for your baseball input. We look forward to some more developing stories next week about baseball. We want to thank Will for once again for joining us, talking about his career and his future career as a wrestler at University of Maryland. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at the 3P Podcast.